Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah. And you know, I always feel like, because we do the Christmas special, I feel like we haven't podcasted in over a month.
It's been about a month, I think.
And so it takes a while to get back into rhythm.
You know?
It was a good break, yes. Yeah.
Not that I saw enough of you in between there. We just didn't record any of our interactions.
Because not everything we do is podcast worthy.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe most things are.
We will get, I'm sure. Because we, in sitting here prepping for the show, we did have a couple of things that we were going to talk about that have occurred in the last month. But why don't we save that all for a later show?
Sure.
So for the next one, we have some Christmas stuff and presents and all that type
automotive
of thing.
Automotive things.
Yeah, automotive things. So yeah, we'll do all that next time. But on this one, because this is the first show of the new year.
So our resolutions, well, it's not a special usually. Resolutions are part of the new year show.
Resolution roundup. So we will round up our resolutions, but to warn you out there now,
yep,
because Star Wars is constantly a discussion on this show,
mm-hmm,
and I actually, I was meaning to write out my saying now that we're now into like the eighth or ninth Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Star Wars at the bottom of the hour after about 30 minutes. So spoilers, if you haven't seen Star Wars, listen to the first half hour.
And save the rest of the podcast for when you get back to it.
And we will warn you again before we get into Star Wars that we're about to talk about Star Wars, so you cannot complain that we just ruined it for you.
Right.
So there we go.
There you go. So I always...
let's do our resolutions first from last year.
We do past ones first, right?
Yeah, we talk about it a little bit, and that's sort of the discussion.
I'm going to talk about yours first or mine first?
Well, okay, that's fine. We'll talk about mine first. I think the listeners know I struggle to come up with these resolutions. And last year, my resolution was to watch lots of sort of streaming or exclusive TV.
And pay TV.
Yeah. So I actually did watch a lot of stuff over the last year, including delving into Netflix, which our household has.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a little bit on Amazon Prime. I'm not going to go through these shows show by show, although I will call out some things.
Wasn't there a particular show at the time we had in mind that you were supposed to watch? I don't think it was True Detective because you'd already seen
it. Was it Sneaky Pete? Yeah. But I did watch, and I know you're probably sitting there at home going, so your resolution was to watch TV? Let me tell you something. When you have to watch TV, it actually does become quite burdensome.
Yeah, right. It's pretty rough.
So I spent a lot of time watching. I watched a couple of premiere dramas on HBO. I watched Big Little Lies, which I think by the time this show comes out, they'll probably have won some awards at the Golden Globes, which is mm-hmm, tonight as we record. I touched base with a couple of, I don't know what you call these things, internet-only dramas. So, for example, I did watch Sneaky Pete, which was an Amazon.com show.
Yeah, only a second season now or something.
I think so. I gave it two episodes and then I got out of it.
Oh, well, not really.
No, but I'm going to come back to that.
It's not really fulfilling your resolution there.
I've just about completed watching Ozark with Jason Bateman on Netflix, which is a Netflix drama. So it's a multi-part drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I found I watched a lot of specials. So I watched a lot of comedy specials. I watched Louis C.K., Sarah Silverman.
Did you watch Louis C.K. before or after he got in trouble?
Before he got into trouble.
Yeah, like I had actually seen one of his things the weekend before, and then he got in trouble, and it's like,
hindsight, when he got into trouble, well, to be honest with you, when I watched this special, I could see it coming.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the thing, is all his stuff would tend towards that, but I always assumed it was just his big joke. It's sort of like his, not secret, it was like his internal monologue, and instead it turns out his internal monologue was somewhat external.
Well, it's interesting, having watched a couple of his different things, and Louis C.K. is famous for sort of giving his fans advanced stuff, do you know what I mean?
He's got a whole system for distributing and cutting out the middle people.
I watched his Netflix special, and to be honest with you, I found it really crude, and I was quite underwhelmed when it was finished.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows I've got a soft spot for Sarah Silverman. She performed as I thought she did. Having watched a lot of these things, I can't remember if I actually watched the Patton Oswalt comedy special. Right. I quite like him, but now in my mind,
he's
cannot...
He's now got a regular TV show, I think.
Yeah, but he did a stand-up special that I read about, I think, on The Ringer, but I now cannot recall, did I watch it or did I read about it and saw the trailer and not watched it? That shows how many different stand-up people
I watched. Well, there was a way, right? So Netflix had said they were going to put out one every week or an average of one a week.
It was too much.
Yeah, it was too many things. And it was big. The big talk earlier this year was about it being the year of a stand-up, and they've got a couple of TV shows that were about old stand-up. I think it came and went. Like, the fad, they kind of build this thing as a fad, and it's not like any of those shows that they mentioned have gotten, like, substantial traction. The new one is the woman one on Amazon, Maisel.
I don't know.
It's about a woman like in the 50s who ends up being doing stand-up comedy, and it's supposed to be pretty
good. Yeah.
But other than that, like, none of them has been – nobody jumped all over these things being like, oh, they're no must-watch TV, to coin a phrase.
Well, that was my thing. I watched a lot of these things, and I didn't feel – now, to be fair, I think Seinfeld's got one that just came out, and I haven't watched that yet. And I quite like Seinfeld. I mean, I liked his TV show. I have a couple of his, and this now ages me, I have a couple of his comedy CDs, which I used to play in the car.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a number of these things on Netflix, and they're all about 70, 80 minutes, right. So it's not a huge chunk of time. But I'm not sitting here feeling that I'm kind of getting anything. I don't know. There was never a moment in any of them where I was laughing so hard, I'm like, yeah, I got something that ordinary people didn't.
You're right. Did you watch the Dave Chappelle stuff?
I watched a bit of it. I've never been Chappelle's hugest fan anyway. I think it's funny. I'm just not, you know, a huge Chappelle fan.
It was not quite like, it was interesting, but it's not like the young, totally wild and outrageous. It was much more of a jaded approach to things. So it was not quite as good, I didn't think.
I appreciated some things from HBO specials. I watched the Robert De Niro as Bernie Madoff movie.
Okay.
I actually saw that on the plane. So I was flying back from London this summer. I'd been upgraded to business class, and the Bernie Madoff thing had come on, and I'm like, ooh, I've been meaning to watch that on HBO.
So do they put that on business class because it's supposed to be a cautionary tale for everybody there? Don't get swindled.
No, I think it's probably some like...
You're all in business class here. You might be taken in by a Ponzi scheme. So please watch this movie. It's like an educational feature.
To be fair, if you're on a British Airways flight to the US from London, this is probably doing some homework. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, to America and engage in a Ponzi scheme.
It's not a warning. It's a instructional.
I quite enjoyed it. I didn't know the ins and outs of Bernie Madoff other than he ripped people off.
Yeah.
You know, it's De Niro. It was pretty... it was directed by Barry Levinson, whose famous name in movies. He did the he'd worked with De Niro before with Dustin Hoffman and with Wag the Dog. That may have been. And Levinson's also famous. He's done a lot of Baltimore stuff. He did what's the one? Is it Avalon? Did you ever see it's in the late 80s and it's about an immigrant family growing up in Baltimore? I can see the people who are in it, and I now can't remember their names. But it's quite a sort of a soap. No, that's unfair. It's sort of like a life drama. Elizabeth McGovern's in it. Someone else who, Aidan Quinn is in it. He was also famous for Homicide, which was a great TV show.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I also really, really enjoyed the Steven Spielberg special on HBO, which was 2 hours of, basically a two-hour interview with Spielberg talking about his own work. And obviously at that moment, it is not a, it's the difference between a biography and an autobiography. Like, the whole thing is based on, this is a sit-down with Steven Spielberg.
Well, so I've had a lot of interviews with other people. But,
no, but
it was obviously with his approval, and, you know, I'm sure he had last decision as to what they said about him.
I found it illuminating to listen to him talk. I have been one of those people who's been slightly... I don't know. For every two Steven Spielberg movies that I go, these are brilliant, he does one where I go, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? It was interesting listening to him talk about earlier his career when he talked about 1941, the movie that kind of bombed.
Yeah, and kind of bombed.
And he was like, I was at this point where I thought I could do anything, and clearly I couldn't.
Didn't mention his role in the Blues Brothers movie?
No. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Cook County's assessor's office.
Well, I do want to get to that. It was interesting. I didn't know that, he knew Brian De Palma.
Yeah, well,
they were all buddies, and De Palma had given him a camera.
I was gonna say, I mean, like, calling it the Spielberg thing undersells it. It's also like a story about like what the movie industry became,
and
largely under a lot of his influence. I mean, not but he had a big influence on going from certain types of movies to different types of movies, and like the culture of directors at that time, and how much they were interacting with each other and talking to each other.
You know, and the fact that
it was Scorsese, like artist.
I didn't realize him and Scorsese were sort of that tight. You always presume that everyone in Hollywood sort of knows each other,
right?
But I find it kind of cool that they all knew each other back then.
Yeah.
When to a large part they were guys sort of scrambling.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, and we are going to get to Star Wars again in the bottom half of the show, so be
ready.
Don't
panic, everybody.
No, yeah, we're not talking about it now. You know, there is a whole generation of directors who are very upfront about how they have been influenced by Spielberg, J.J. Abrams, some of these other guys. But it's interesting when you watch, and I'm not knocking them, not in any which way, although it sounds like I'm probably about to. The one thing about Spielberg that I learned from watching that special was he's clearly a master technician of like the art and the craft of making films. Like all that stuff from when he was a kid, fiddling around with 8mm and stuff like that. But I think the one thing that sometimes gets forgotten with the criticisms of Spielberg, criticisms that I've probably made as a film fan, his films are all about something. Do you know what I mean? And it came through this whole notion of his relationship with his dad and all this kind of stuff. And I feel like, and again, this is the criticism that I don't mean to be a criticism. All these people that sort of, that are in the industry now that sort of pay tribute to Spielberg, yeah, they're able to do it, but they don't quite capture the essence of what makes Spielberg.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No. That's
good. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm not criticizing this. It's, yeah.
100%. I mean, because listen, the best artists in any area aren't the ones necessarily who can just make the nicest looking picture, but they're saying something, or the nicest music, whatever. They have a point in some respects, or they have a mood they want to convey, or something like that. Whereas you could take a lot of J.J. I'm thinking of the Star Trek movies, where it's technically well done, but. And so, therefore, like, what are we exploring here? You know, whereas, you know, Spielberg movies, I think if you to be a great director, to be motivated to make it, not only just to have the abilities, but to be motivated to make something that's a cohesive piece, you need to be like, here's what I'm trying to say. And that could be simpler or complicated message, but now you've got a unifying set of principles that direct you. Okay, no, what I'm going to do in this shot is this because that fits my framework or whatever I'm doing. Instead of, I'm going to do a shot like this because it looks cool. It's got to look cool, and it's got to be, it's conveying something.
Here was something too that I didn't know or perhaps had forgotten about Spielberg. He really was, is it Wunderkind? He was like, prodigy, in his 20s. Like, yeah, he really was a prodigy. And you forget how young he was doing Jaws. And I still remember watching the TV movie Duel with Dennis Weaver about the car and the truck, where the truck just chases the car for an hour and a half. You know, I mean, he really was. Mozart? Couldn't. Right, he was a genius when he was a kid.
We won't know until longer, but...
No, but it's interesting, too, in that he really was those things, because it's funnily, I don't sit here... He's not a director who suddenly got better. He's not a director who's got worse. He's just been this... You can go to... When I watched this documentary, I found that you could go to any point in his career and pull out a movie that goes, that's a classic. Like Jaws, Jaws is a classic. That's from 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas Saving Private Ryan is 10 years ago. Now, there's 35 years between them. But they're both, like, in this sort of pantheon. I mean, E.T. is still one of his earliest movies. Now, I've only seen that once, and I don't happen to like it. But that amazing. I just find that amazing. There's no... Spielberg doesn't have an arc. He was just there, and he's been there the whole time.
So what was your New Year's resolution? To talk about Spielberg? Is that what it was?
No, but I'm digressing. So here are some of my conclusions from watching... Streaming TV. And I know we talked about this on a show, I think back in October or November, we talked about something, we'd followed up on an article that had occurred in Deadspin where someone had talked about the fact that there's too much TV now to get your arms around. I liked all the sort of one-offs and specials that I watched. All right, so this is a slightly longer point. I enjoyed the comedy specials, even though they now all run together and I can't remember them. I enjoyed, you know, the HBO movie events, Robert De Niro, Steven Spielberg documentary. I've watched, you know, I watched a couple of episodes of Transparent, which was the highly acclaimed, you know, comedy with what's his face from Arrested Development. Yeah. Ozark with Jason Bateman.
Over because he's in trouble too.
Yeah, he's in trouble along with Louis C.K. I enjoyed Ozark with Jason Bateman, which I'm just about to finish. So if you've seen it, don't say anything to me right now. I've watched, you know, 9 episodes of that and I'm waiting for the last episode because I love Jason Bateman and it's got a great cast. Laura Linney's in it. You know, I remember watching, I started by watching Sneaky Pete on Amazon.com, which was done by the same people who'd done Justified. And I watched it and it was good. But at the end of the day, I do not, and I think I made this point back then when we talked about Breaking Bad and we talked about The Sopranos and The Wire. I'm not entirely convinced that especially, and I know I didn't watch House of Cards, which obviously now he's in trouble, so that thing is about to end. I'm not entirely convinced that extra services that you're paying for, the good dramas are getting culled by over-the-air TV and then HBO. By sort of basic slash premium cable.
What was the statement? The good dramas?
The good dramas... sort of TV series, they're getting co-opted. No one who's got a, no one is going to Netflix, with the exception of House of Cards. House of Cards is still an outlier that is of HBO quality. At the end of the day,
that's not true.
No, there, I think so.
There's other things.
These things are competent. They're very good. But I'm not sitting here, and again, and as much as I love Jason Bateman, and I've sat through Ozark, if I never saw it, I'm not suddenly convinced. You would struggle to convince me that I'd missed out on something.
Well, you didn't watch it.
Because with Breaking Bad, you've always said to me, "Yeah, Breaking Bad really good," and I never watched that. Maybe I should have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's not that limited. I wanted to get to the point of whether you're actually successful in your resolution or not. I'm not quite sure because, like, you haven't even mentioned Stranger Things, which was the biggest Netflix hit of the past 2 years. So
I do need to,
you know, like certainly the biggest cultural hit. Who knows how many people watched it, kind of thing. But it was certainly the biggest thing. So that would fit that bill. Like to sort of say, like, oh, you know, House of Cards is the only thing that made a big dent. Well, that's not true.
I did watch him. Here's what I enjoyed.
I told you to watch Glow, and you didn't watch that, right?
No, but I watched American Vandal. I really enjoyed
it. It's funny that you picked that one right again because I that was good, but it was like
I enjoyed that because that appealed to my. It's sort of like a fake. What do you call
those
shows?
Serial. Or The Making of Murder. Like, so it's one of these multi-part documentaries in theory, but it's a spoof.
But it's
you know,
spoof,
it's fictional.
Yeah.
And but they talk about it's like a story of somebody who painted things on people's car in a parking lot and the multi-part investigation and the investigator gets swept up in the whole things and people are it's certainly fun.
But again,
if that's what you're gonna judge as to whether these things are successful
or not. But I'm gonna make a point. I really enjoyed that. But again, I don't feel and again, this is always bookended by the fact that, or qualified by the fact that, yes, as we know over the years, I'm a bit of a minge bag and I don't like paying for things I could get for free. I never really found anything compelling enough for me to go, I need to spend more money on selective premium services.
No, I mean, that's part of it. One of the
the good point is there is now more. There is now more quality stuff out there than ever before. That is the one thing that Netflix and Amazon and all these, you know, Hulu has some stuff. Like, again, I think, is it The Handmaid's Tale that's on Hulu?
Yeah.
Now, I don't get Hulu. I'm not going to pay for it. So, again, there's plenty of really good stuff out there. I watched a lot of episodes of the US version of The Killing, which I think is originally one of those Norwegian or Danish or Sweden serials, the American version with some people in it. I watched quite a few episodes of that. But I never felt there was enough out there to make me... I'm not a cord cutter. And what I mean by that is I'm not the sort of person... I doubt... Until sports changes, I doubt I'm ever going to do away with basic cable. I have a... You know, the Spike Guest Cameron, a friend of this show, he is notorious for over the years on trying to survive without basic cable and do as much as possible through his computer and services. And he's always said, yeah, I just need to find a way to access a bit more of the sports stuff. And then I would never, ever need cable again. I do not see myself as someone. No, I'm still sort of I'm still sort of kept alive by basic cable. Like, I've never found enough things for me to go, yeah, I can dump that money a month and just get Hulu or just get Netflix. I mean,
don't worry about it. It's all coming together anyway.
That's true, too.
The point is that this distinction is going to be gone at some point. One of the interesting things we were talking about before is that Netflix, pretty quietly, has now appeared on all of the cable systems, meaning it's a channel, quote unquote. I mean, you tune it in on your box. It ultimately puts you to the Netflix app, basically, where you watch.
It's like HBO.
Shows.
You're either paying for it or you're not.
Right, but it's not running the shows continuously. You go over to the thing, it brings up your Netflix.
Yeah.
You still have to pay the extra money. But the fact that it's there, that was the biggest thing, I think, that kept people from being interested in it was you had to have a Google Cast or an Apple TV, or you had to watch it on your phone or something like that, where you had these 80 different steps to get to it. So you couldn't really surf into it in Netflix. You'd be watching TV. If you decide you want to watch Netflix or you decide you want to watch Amazon, it would be steps to get there. So you had to make a decision to go over there, and it kept the stream separate, so to speak. Well, now Netflix is appearing in your cable system. That's step one. Step two is the channels, other than like the sports channels, will all be like that. You want to watch a show? You want to watch Seinfeld? You just go to whatever the thing is that's carrying Seinfeld and you watch Seinfeld. And so at the end of the day, it's all going to be the same thing. We'll be 10, 15 years from now, we'll be referring to, I don't know if we'll use the word cable, we'll call it TV, whatever it is, we'll be referring to, it's all going to be one pipe and all this stuff is mixed together.
I know Apple apparently are getting into the TV and movie business. I know there's a lot of talk that apparently, I mentioned this because I watched her show on HBO, Reese Witherspoon. I enjoyed Big Little Lies, very sort of soap opera-ish with her and Nicole Kidman, and that will hoover up some awards, I would imagine. But apparently her and Jennifer Aniston are doing a show about morning TV. That's what the show's about. But it's going to be for Apple. I'm still not of an understanding, how is someone like me going to get that show? Will I have to pay for it now via my iTunes? Or because I pay money every year to Apple for their cloud service or Apple Match or something, you know, what moment is everything, in the same way that Amazon, any of us can buy something off Amazon, or you can make a decision to drop extra money to get Amazon Prime, which gives you free shipping and all kinds of different things, and also access to their streaming services. I'm curious to see how Apple are going to handle it, as they're sort of already out there as this, I don't know, shop for audio and video entertainment and books. I don't know how.
It's not going to be free, you know?
So, you know, will this be an a la carte thing in the same way that you buy anything
else
from Apple?
Show,
I don't know. I don't know. How's that going
to
work?
You'll pay something for access. I mean, what they're trying to do is put enough stuff on there that you sign up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if it says anything on the internet about it. Anyway. Well, so.
So I watched it again. I watched a lot of TV. So that was a good. That
so
was
you feel, you feel it was success? You satisfied your resolution.
Yeah. And I think I did learn something about, and to be entirely fair, no. I did learn something about my own TV habits and what I'm going to do moving forward.
Yeah.
All right. So that's resolution.
So my resolution was to barbecue meats. And so I did that.
All right.
So over the course of the year.
And I have seen that. I've seen the egg grill smoker thing.
Yeah, it's a Weber smoking mountain, not a big green egg kind of thing. But the couple of rounds of pulled pork off a pork butt or Boston butt, whatever you want to call it. Some brisket, beef brisket. I've definitely done baby back ribs. I don't think I've done spare ribs yet or beef ribs, baby back being parts of – no.
Baby backs are the smaller ones.
Yeah.
That's how I always remember
them. But they're pork versus beef.
Yeah.
I've done salmon and burgers and some other things that were quicker type of things where you just put them on there and you just pick up a bit of smoke. Those all went very well. Brisket was by far the hardest, just to keep it the right moisture. The pork butt, like, that was almost easy. Like, it was amazing. Like, you have to spend 12, 14 hours, and there's a lot of temperature monitoring, but as long as you do that, it comes out fine.
Okay.
You know, like, it's very hard to, like, dry it out or anything like that, whereas the brisket's the way it's cut. It's got two different parts, and parts of it will cook faster than the other parts. It's not as cooperative in the sense that it doesn't have as much fat in there that turns it into nice, juicy stuff. I think next time they call it crutch, where you'd put foil around it in order to get it to be just right. I wanted to do, for this today, I had planned on doing a whole chicken, and then we could have snacked on the chicken. The problem is it's was 8 degrees out when I woke up this morning, and we were doing this relatively early in the day, and the idea of trying to, chicken wouldn't have taken too long, but to get a fire going at 8 in the morning at 8 degrees, I was not terribly excited about that, so I didn't end up doing that.
So again, before you go on, because the one big question for me, obviously, when I think of smoking, I'm thinking of things like turkey or chicken or pork butt or brisket that traditionally they take a long, like if you make ribs in your oven, then unless you're clearing a large amount of time anyway, you can't do it. I was interested to hear when you said I smoke burgers and I smoke salmon, which are things that can that you could easily cook by another version. How more labor intensive was it to smoke those items?
Salmon, not at all, because the salmon cooks pretty fast.
Anyway. So it was the same as maybe this is my question. Instead of firing up the grill to cook a burger, is it the same amount of time and labor intensive smoke the burger, or are you going, look, I'm going to do it a different way, even though it's more involved? Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm asking the question
properly. I mean, it's more involved than throwing it on. Like, you throw a burger on the grill, you turn on your gas grill, it's hot, you put it on there, you flip it over once.
Yeah, but if you're doing a charcoal grill, that takes a certain block of time.
Yeah.
So is smoking similar, or is smoking longer than
slightly
that?
Slightly longer in terms of setup.
Okay.
But because you're running everything at a lower temperature, because I was trying to get the burgers to taste smoky, not just be
cooked.
Grilled, you right. know, like in a different way. So I ran that like at a lower temperature. So it was almost a little bit more, the burgers were almost a little bit meatloafy. Like, they're not going to have a bunch of grill marks on them because I'm cooking it at like 250 or something like that, or 275, instead of at the normal 400, 500 degrees where you get a char, different kind of thing. But as a result, you end up with like a smoky meatloaf burger, meatball type of thing.
So both the burgers and the salmon, you were making if you're sitting at home and deciding what to do, You definitely have two different flavor profiles to chase here rather than just two different methods. I think that was my question about smoking meats.
Two different flavor profiles.
Well, for example, salmon, I could grill it, but you know something.
You mean relative to the grilling versions?
Yeah, so if I grill it, it's going to taste one way, but if I choose to smoke my salmon, actually getting something that is very different.
That's the idea. Otherwise, I would just throw it on the grill.
Yeah.
Salmon was really easy and worked out very well. So I did, the only thing, I had a plan to like save a bunch of it over time. And I can't figure out what I did with some of this stuff. So anyway, we've got some pulled pork that I tried to warm up just before this. I mean, the trouble is you can't really warm up barbecue. You lose a lot of its attributes. You know, the big benefit of the low and slow is you're taking all of the stuff that's all the fat and cartilage and bits and pieces, and you're like melting them into the moisture and the gelatinous stuff that it ends up being.
This is a middle of the day show for us, and I've not eaten any breakfast, so I'm really glad that we're finally getting to this. I'm starving.
So I only have a very small amount of bread, but I should have brought another fork. But
I've got fingers and a pen.
I've got a bunch of the barbecue. So I've warmed it up, and it's it doesn't look quite like it would. I think it should still have its smoke. Like the bark, which is the exterior surface, is this brown stuff. Normally, this would be a lot crisper.
But it looks good, though. This is almost pretty. Food magazine
and
quality.
I brought some sauce. Maybe I should take a picture of this while we're here. But
let's
bring
it up.
I brought some sauce, sauce, some Carolina Treat, which is really a cooking sauce, but it's a no sugar kind of vinegar based sauce, and then some Stubbs barbecue. Somebody along the way had recommended that mixing the two of those would be a good choice, and that's kind of what I did here. Pictures. Sorry, I'm pausing for pictures.
So when you smoke something, you're obviously smoking it, but are you also adding sauces too, or is that always a post-smoking step, or are there different ways?
You add the sauces afterward. What you do is you cover this. You put a rub on it.
Okay.
I mean, I think the pork basically, it was mustard. You put a bit of mustard, which is yellow mustard, just to give it some the spices and things, something to adhere to. And it had a rub. I think I got this rub recipe from Virtual Weber Bullet, which is a website. The big website for barbecue people, I think, is Amazing Ribs.
Okay.
And that one, it's like agnostic as to what version, like what equipment you're using.
Should I taste it now before sauce?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because there's a whole load here. And like I said, I haven't had any breakfast, so.
So it's a little drier than it would have been for sure, but.
But you can taste the
smoke.
Yeah. That's good.
So you have the rub and you put it in there, and then in the later stages,
it hasn't lost as much. Obviously, it's not quite the same as if you'd done it today, but I'm going to say this right now. To me, it hasn't lost as much as perhaps
you'd think.
knows, perhaps you'd sort of indicate it a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Just to tell you, that was just how good it was before.
Yeah. And
it's
still very... what's the word? When it's chewable. You know, it hasn't gone dry. And, you know, sometimes with things that have... All right. So anyway, no, I've got lost in thought there and I'm really desperate to eat more food. You've put the... why don't you talk a little bit about these two sauces?
Well, Stubbs is out of Austin, Texas, and it's kind of a standard sweet, I guess probably tomato-based sauce. Carolina Treat, like I said, is originally original cooking barbecue sauce, no sugar. It's really more of a vinegar-based sauce.
Vinegar-based.
I tend to like that stuff better myself.
Now, did you cook this specific section of brisket with this stuff on it?
This is pork.
Pork, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Pork butt.
Oh, I was starting to say, by the way, you spray it at the end, usually with some apple juice or something else with a little sugar coating just to kind of
help
encourage the crust. But
that's really good.
So there's that. Now, it all went pretty well, and I'm looking forward to doing it. One of the friends of the pod, Christian, he's getting his own barbecue rig set up where it's like a oil drum done vertically. I think it's a similar setup to what I've got, only it's using bigger pieces of metal and like. So I'm looking forward to sort of comparing notes and putting things together. The one thing is you end up making a lot of food, and I'm going to give you a hard time here because one of the times I made this was the 4th of July.
Well, I
made two whole pork butts
expecting
a large crowd, and it was rainy. I mean, it was not a great 4th of July, but
somebody's
family completely no-showed, and so I was missing five mouths to feed, and so I had a lot of... That's probably what this is from that I think about it, because I had a lot left over from that.
In terms of smoking food, is there... And you mentioned friend of the show, Christian, putting this set up together. Obviously, you do need a certain setup in order to do this. But do you find, is there like a ranking of steps or secrets? Like, hey, whatever you're going to do, don't forget to do this. Like, is it much where it comes down to time? Or does it come down to what you're, you know, are there a couple of sort of key fundamentals that if you miss any of these steps, then it's going to be a disaster? I would imagine time is always one of them because this is a slower process.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing. Is there something else in terms of, you know, and I'm now specifically talking about rubs or sauces or is there something else that you've learned? Like, hey, you always make sure you do that. Make sure you put enough salt and pepper on it.
Nothing like that because it's all different. But the one thing I would say is don't be afraid to start early. Like if you're taking this up, the big worry I had the first couple of times was because you never really know, is it going to take 8 hours, 12 hours, what it is. You'll run a thermometer. The real pros won't do this, but at home, run a thermometer into the meat so you know when it gets the right temperature. But I wouldn't be afraid if you're doing it to start early, because if you finish barbecue early, as long as you keep it warm from there on out, it's still going to be very good. You might have a little softening of the bark, but the idea...
This is very good.
It's not like when you make a steak where you're timing it to come out on the table and you can be like, okay, this maybe take 10 minutes, maybe it's going to take 15 minutes. It won't matter. The problem is if you, like a couple of times where I started a little later because I was too scared of being early, you end up like if you have to run long, you're running an hour long or like 2 hours long. And so suddenly people are like waiting for eating at 8 o'clock when you thought you were going to be eating at 6 o'clock. So
you overcook it?
Not really. You can.
Is it one of those things where you end up...
The brisket, like, you dry out, I've been thinking pretty hard. I mean, what people talk about is...
I'm sorry, this is really good.
Some of the recipes have you cooking it to a certain degree and then wrapping it in foil, and that's... They call it the crutch, or a crutch, which is... It's a crutch in the sense that you're cheating the fact that it might run out of moisture. Oh, the other thing, the stall. This is the one I didn't know about. So, because you're doing a low temperature... It's a good thing
I wore old trousers, because I could just wipe my hands on the trousers.
I have napkins right here.
Oh, there's two napkins. There's only one. Oh, sorry. I didn't know that.
The stall is... You're pushing a certain amount of moisture out all along, and it's essentially sweats, you know, because as the moisture evaporates, it cools whatever it's on. And you'll hit a point in the temperature rise of the meat where it will just sort of stop. And you'll be sort of panicked because... This thing is not getting warm enough to be done cooking, what happens is it just gets stuck there at that temperature. And one of the ways you can deal with that is by wrapping it in foil, because now the moisture won't go off anymore. Now it continues to heat. But if you're patient enough to run through it, it will ultimately push off enough moisture that the temperature will start to rise again.
Do you feel that you now know enough about it? I'm sure when you started, you were referring to either the internet or books. But do you feel now that you've mastered it in the state, like you wouldn't really have to do too much research? Or is there anything left where you want to go, I want to smoke that, and I might, you know, smoke in a turkey or... Yeah, something. I don't know. I'm not. I'm just saying. I mean, do you sort of feel like? I'm not saying suggesting that you feel like you're an expert, but do you feel like you've mastered the fundamentals that you know?
Like, put it this way: if you gave me a piece of meat now and to barbecue this, and don't look at the internet, I could deal with that, right?
Okay.
It may not come out the greatest thing in the world. I'd rather look up the recipes for a new rub or like.
To see okay, that's what I'm saying. But it's not like, oh wow, you know.
But when you started, you're like, I wouldn't have an idea. Like how hot do I need to make this? How do I set up the grill? It's like carpentry. Like, you know, once you learn how to hammer and cut and do the pieces of wood, well, now somebody says build a table, and you might not really build a great table. But at least you know, okay, I'm going to cut pieces of wood, I'm going to hammer a piece, but I'm going to screw a piece of wood, I'm going to use a drill, I'm going to use sanding, you know, all the little pieces that you know how to work, you can do.
It's really good.
It went pretty well.
Very tasty. Yeah.
You've done a good job on it.
No, I'm just eating away, yeah. And I don't mean just because I'm hungry. It tastes good.
Yeah. So, all in all, it went well. That was a good resolution. I would have liked to have done it more often, but again, I'm trying to figure out some. The reason why I wanted to try out the chicken is try to find some things that are smaller amounts.
Yeah.
I have a small piece of brisket that's in the freezer that I also thought about defrosting and putting it on there, but I didn't really have enough time to put that together, and that would involve me getting up, like, because a couple of these things I got up in the middle of the night. Brisket I started like at midnight and then got up repeatedly over the course of the night.
Oh god.
But like the
I having a baby
the pork but like I would do I I got up at like 7 a.m. and started, which is kind of fun too. And like I'm always doing checking the temperature every half an hour, an hour. Gave me a big opportunity to use my Google Home and Alexa, where I would say...
Well, I do remember. I think we had that on one of our prior shows.
Set timer for 20 minutes, and it would, you know, remind me to go back to it. So I think a success there.
And it's definitely something that you're like, oh, I'm glad I know how to do this, and I'm going to do it more.
I'll do it more often.
All right.
New resolutions, right?
Do you want to do them now or at the end of the show?
No, we should do them now.
Do them now, okay.
People who are avoiding Star Wars won't hear them.
Mine actually has a name. My resolution has a title.
Okay.
Oh, I've forgotten it now. I thought about it in the car coming over. But the subtitle was Taste Like Chicken. I actually think there's something like Around the World in 80 Foods. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do, I do like eating out. Myself and my family, we like eating out. But, you know, the humdrum of regular life means that I think all of us, humans as creatures of habit, you end up sort of trolling the same 3 or 4 things. And ultimately, if it's Chinese food or Mexican food, you are getting whatever the local sort of homogenized version of it is. We live in a major metropolitan area. I've decided this year, because we eat out a lot, I'm going to not just go to like Ethiopian food or proper Belgian food or stuff like that. I'm actually going to go to places and I'm going to make every effort to order things.
The most authentic version of what they've got there.
Or something that is sort of unique to that. To that particular cuisine. Right. So, for example, I'm going to use sort of French or Belgian food. Yeah, you can go there and have a steak, but that's actually not going to count. I need to go there and have frog's legs or snails.
Escargot
or something like that. Ethiopian food, Spanish, proper Spanish food. Find some real authentic Mexican food rather than the standard Tex-Mex, you're having a burrito, which is what this is what I'm saying. So,
yeah, but aside China, from, I'm not sure there's such a thing as that, but there are certainly a lot of Central American foods around here.
That's what I mean. So I'm adamant that over the next year to try and get 10 to 12 different food cultures. I've never had proper Vietnamese food, like Vietnamese sandwiches. I've never really had them. Yes.
I know that, but... Yeah.
You know, so that's my resolution. So
10 to 12, you should have no trouble with 10 to 12. You should have 10 to 12 different... nationality,
ethnicity, yes,
right, okay,
around the world, and so at the end of it, I'm either going to prove or disprove the famous saying, "It all just tastes like chicken."
Yeah, right, I get it.
So there you go.
That was the subtitle.
Yeah, that's the very.
So that is a resolution that is much more like my resolutions typically are, and people have heard this before, where I normally say, why do a resolution that's about like I'm going to lose X pounds? These are painful resolutions. What you want resolutions that you will profit personally as well as enjoying the process. So I've had resolutions like making barbecue. I've had resolutions like I had one that was eating more fajitas, had one that was having bourbons, I had another one that was brewing beer, all sort of towards that. I couldn't come up with one like that this year, so I came up with something a little bit different.
Okay.
I'm going to do 15,000 push-ups.
Ooh.
So I worked that out. There's actually not that many on a, when you spread it out, like it seems like.
It's 500 a day.
No, no. What?
It's 365 days, 363.
It would be like.
You keep talking.
300 a week.
That's a lot of push-ups, man.
No, it's like 300 a week, and that's rounding down from 52 to 50 weeks, right? 300 a week, and you'd be doing, if you did 300 a week, that's basically 50 a day for 6 of those days each week.
Oh, that's a lot of push-ups.
Anybody can do 50 push-ups in a day. The trick is going to be to doing it regularly and not falling behind.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I thought it would be just interesting because I would be like, if I can successfully do that at the end of the year, will I be like, I'm great at push-ups, or will I be like, yeah, it was exercise, you know, it's just a thing, you know, like just like running. It's, you know, at this point in my life when I run or do other exercises, you know, when you're a kid or a younger person, you could really see improvement. It's like, oh my goodness, I'm doing this better. At this point, like a lot of these exercises, you'll get better. You're like better able to handle it. But I'm not like, I'm really getting faster, you know, or anything like that. So with the push-ups, I'm trying to figure out when I'm done, will I be like, oh, I've built up a certain amount of muscle mass? Or will I just be like, hey, that was a piece of the exercise. I'm in better shape than I would be if I didn't do them. But it's not like appreciable.
There is a school of thought that say you can attain a certain physique and fitness by just doing bodyweight exercises. I have, over the last couple of weeks, noticing that over the holiday period, mm-hmm. I have over-imbibed and my pants have become a little bit snug. Mm-hmm. I've gone back to doing, starting at 30, and we'll try and do a bit more, 30 push-ups and 30 body squats where you just squat without weight, which I used to do all the time as my sort of just getting up. You know, everyday exercises, every time before I step in the shower. Like, okay, the shower's warming up. Get down and do it now. It takes 3 or 4 minutes. Done, in the shower. If you don't do anything else all day, you've done something. So I'm trying to do that again. Of course, the flip side is that because doing these exercises is a bit of a hassle, I'm not only showering like twice a week because I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be getting it.
Right.
So I do think there is some worth in that. I'm curious to see.
I'll occasionally do weight work, you know. But
see, I stopped doing all that years ago.
But it's very intermittent and it's when I have time for work and normally I do that. I want to break it up. But that's the other thing that'll be interesting is doing something every single day or more or less every single day. Will that result in any problems? One downside is I've done a little bit already and my wrist hurts right now. I'm a little worried about what might disrupt me. And I certainly have a history of neck and shoulder problems. So I need to make sure I don't get myself in trouble. One of the major points that I got.
A year from now, when we're doing the resolution roundup, while I sit and share with everyone the results of my resolutions, you will actually be on the floor with a microphone next to you doing push-ups just to prove to our listeners that you've actually done it. So I guess I should, personally, and again, I want to, but you know, we're about to move on to Star Wars. So, hey, we've given you 40 minutes of a show before Star Wars. There is something to this notion. Most people end up with these resolutions that are just sort of self-worth, like something that you're not doing. But I had a conversation with someone on New Year's Eve where their resolution was to just aim higher. And there is something about this notion of trying to do something that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a strange way, while on the face of it, your resolution just feels like a variant of lose some weight or whatever, it's actually not because you picked one specific thing. And I think, like I said, there's a school of thought that say you can get away with just 2 or 3 different exercises if you want to be healthy. I'm not saying you're going to look like Arnold, but if you want to be healthy, a push-up is one of them. So,
One of the reasons I decided it was okay I could do this is I was sure that it must be an app like this, and I found a great app. And it's a free, well, the great part about this app is, so it's an app, it's a simple counter app. Let's see if I have the name of it, because I think it would be really useful.
Good thing I'm eating all the food here then.
Active count. What is, no, that's not the name of the app. I can't find it now, but
this is really good, by the way. The listener hears me chew the smoked pork product.
Thing Counter. It's called Thing Counter. At least it's available on Android. And you can make anything for counting.
Okay.
But the big benefit is it has a little widget that you can put on your home. So you don't have to open the app. I just have a little widget here on the home screen.
Okay.
And it right now you'll see it says 51 because I just mistakenly pressed it. It was at 50.
Okay.
But all you got to do is press it
15,000
right there on your screen. You don't need to open the app. You just kind of, you can set it to like count by ones or fives or whatever.
And then you log in what you did? Or it counts away and you do it?
No, I got to put it in each time I do. But this way, I thought it'd be interesting. Part of it was just like, I don't need to have like a pad of paper. I don't want to have to write this down. But having it on my phone where I could do like, oh, I did 50 today. Click, click, click. I add 50 on there. And we'll see that number get up to whatever. And apparently it will generate some basic stats like progression. So it might be interesting to see, can I do this on a flat?
It's going to be interesting to see come September when you go, geez, I'm 6,000 off. I need to get going. All right. So that's resolutions.
Now, I should mention, we were talking about before, there's something I did recently that could have been my New Year's resolution, and I can count that if it doesn't work out, which is HBO was running all of the Harry Potter movies right around New Year's. I can't remember. But I recorded them all, and then in the ensuing days over New Year's Day, and I was laid up sick, and between watching football or not watching football when the games got bad enough, I watched all of them. So all
seven?
Seven, yeah. All seven of the Harry Potter movies over the course of a week. And that could have been a resolution in and of itself, because I've never watched them. I've never read the books. And
Nor have I. I think it's all bollocks. Harry Potter and the Nerds of Northamptonshire or whatever it
was. It was very interesting to watch them back to back because it covers 10 years and the kids are little kids at the beginning. At the end, they're 20 some odd years old. Like, I thought it was interesting because each of the little, like the descriptions would say, oh, in his first year and his second year, his third year. And I was thinking like high school. And then they're like in his fifth year and then in his sixth year. And then the last year, he's not even in the school, which they break out over the two movies. All in all, I mean, I think it was good.
There's a Woody Allen joke in there somewhere. Yeah. I just can't find it right now.
It was very good. I mean, we'll talk about it in more detail another time. But I thought it was – they were very good. It was weird watching the back-to-back because of the progression. But what I can totally see of it is I can imagine if you were within shouting distance of his age when you started these things – this is why it's got to be like huge for people who are whatever that age is. I forget what year it started. But if you were, you know – entering high school or maybe a couple years behind or a couple years ahead when he starts off, and then you follow along the progression, because a lot of it was changing from being a little kid and the little kid pressure thing kid to higher pressures to like more dramatic stuff.
I don't want to get too far into it
interpersonal
now,
but relationships.
It is sort of a catcher in the rye for its generation. To an extent, there are a lot of people.
Yeah, well, Catcher in the Rye's got a whole element of angst and things like that. But for people who are like be into that, you could really feel like the stories. Obviously, it was all about magic and things like that. You could easily see how, if you were a kid at that age, you could sort of see, you could imagine yourself in each of those roles and have it progress along with you. It might have been very interesting. There is a lot of bit that I thought was very Star Wars-ish. Which is going to lead into this, which is, you know, all about like the secret things behind and persuading people to be good and bad and like the super duper evil villain out in the grand world and things like that. So with that, I segue us into the discussion.
Yeah,
so Star Wars.
You've had 45 minutes.
Technically called The Last Jedi.
You've had 45 minutes of a regular show. If you haven't seen Star Wars, click at now.
That's right, yeah.
We're now going to give you, if you want to pause and come back.
We originally anticipated half an hour, which is...
I don't think we're going to make it. So we're going to give you a double show in one here. Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Let's go there. So I actually went to The Last Jedi and I wore a hoodie to get into the full Star Wars thing where everyone seems to be wearing hoods. Yeah, and I want to say this as someone from Britain.
You went and see it by yourself, right? You went to see it at a Dolby theater, not 3D, which is Dolby is now a new thing that they can charge you $3 for better sound and better picture. There are big screens. We also went to see it.
I'm completely apt up with my tickets in that I use Fandango. I have no idea what I'm paying anymore.
$17, I think it was, or something like that. We saw like a matinee, and I think it was $17. And we saw it over at Tyson's Corner, which is like the big fancy
shopping mall
here. And the big fiasco, so I forget what day we saw it was. Was it New Year's Eve? It was over the weekend.
It was over weekend holiday slash.
The parking lots at the mall were full. Like, full.
Oh,
like,
no.
You couldn't get into this. And I'm like, this is nuts. I don't understand I guess everybody was doing shopping there. But if you're going to go see a movie, like, I'm never going to go back to this theater. It was a nice theater when you're in there.
Yeah.
But the idea that I'm going to have to wrestle through this many people to get to see a movie when I can go to
some
place with a big open parking lot.
Yep, that's why.
It's crazy.
Yep.
And so it was like we were arriving in separate cars and huge fiasco. Like, I ended up parking across the street at like an office building and paying $10, and somebody else, like, we were all over the place. And thankfully, we had planned to get, even though it was reserved seating, we said, well, let's get there half an hour early. And thankfully, we basically walked in as the previews were starting after all was said and done.
I know it's hip that society now has this one-stop shopping type sort of convenience, but in a strange way, restaurants, shopping, and cinema. Let's separate all these suckers out and have them in different places. I don't want it on the one.
That's half of the people at Texas might have been the restaurants. Yeah. It was like a two something. Like, this is why I say it was a weird weekend holiday thing. There was like the restaurants were full, and they had pretty nice restaurants in Tyson's Corner. I mean, they're not.
It's like when people build arenas and go, and the arena's going to have the arena's going to have a supermarket next to it and a hotel. Yeah. Well, I don't want to sit in a hotel when there are 25,000 drunks coming in and out of it all the time.
Yeah.
Let's separate all this stuff out again. So you went to Tyson's Corner. I went to a regular cinema. I did sit in the
reserve seat. Like, similar type thing. And we also opted out of the 3D. We saw 3D.
I don't do 3D. Still, I haven't done 3D. It's not my thing. Like I said, I wore a hoodie to get into the full thing.
It's not like I saw a lot of people in hoodies at the movie.
I want to say this as someone from Britain. I want to say this to all our British listeners. If you're concerned about the effects of Brexit, don't worry. It does appear from watching any of these Star Wars movies that in about a million years' time, we're going to be running the galaxy and we'll have our empire back. Because
mostly the bad guys, though.
But there are some good guys. Everyone seems to have a British
accent. One of the comments on there is that I saw something I never registered with me is, Boyega is British also.
Yeah.
But he doesn't speak with a British accent in the movie.
No, they made
it. Whereas Daisy Ridley is also British, and they have her speak with a British accent. So why they decided that that's the difference? Apparently, if you're.
I think because they just want to mix it up.
Like, if you're powerful, you're supposed to have a British accent.
Oh, really?
If you're like a Han Solo type ne'er-do-well like Poe or Finn, they give you
an American accent. So that was my sort of overwhelming first takeaway from the film.
I thought you were going to mention that, because Luke Skywalker's island is off the coast of Ireland, and a bunch of those stone huts he was in are real stone huts from, although I think they built their own set, but they used the stone huts that are actually there from 1,000-some-odd years ago.
So this is technically episode, what is this technically, eight. Episode 8?
No.
Three, six, seven, yes, it's episode 8. No. Those first three movies are great. Last three movies suck. The one that didn't have anything to do with it was really good, and then the one that they just made that had something to do with the first six was really good as well.
This eighth one, directed by Rian Johnson, who's best known for Looper,
Brick,
but not J.J. Abrams did the last one before this. J.J. Abrams is doing the next one, or as you would say, J.J. Abrahams.
That's correct.
But they've already said that Rian Johnson has been signed to do the next three that they're doing this after this. So they're doing another set of three that's going to be like a generation removed forward.
And that is never going to occur.
It's 100% going to occur.
Let me tell you why. I thought this was a bad movie. Not a bad Star Wars movie. I thought it was a bad movie.
Well, you're in a minority.
And so I'm now going to tell you why these other three with Rian Johnson are never going to happen.
Okay.
Everything always comes back to James Bond. The James Bond franchise is
like
famous.
Let me finish.
The James Bond franchise, however good or bad the last movie was, they always put out a press release going, we asked that dude back. Because that's how they do business. Because that's how it works in the art world. No one goes around hammering someone else because it's a enclosed industry. If Rian Johnson's Star Wars movie was that great, this Last Jedi, they would have put him in charge of the next one to finish his story.
No.
They wouldn't have fobbed him off with another three with new characters and go and do your own thing. My prediction right now, those other three Star Wars movies will not. There may be three more Star Wars movies. They will not all be directed by Rian Johnson.
That's not a may. There's a guarantee to be three more Star Wars
telling
movies.
You no. This is a bad movie.
They might.
I'm sorry.
Well, you're wrong.
I'm going to.
I mean,
to
like
it.
As usual, you're wrong. I mean, when a movie gets like 90% ratings off of not Rotten Tomatoes,
and almost everybody says
it's a good movie,
and it's made
the most movie of every year in 2017.
No, I'm not saying it's not success. Not success.
It's not a bad movie.
Let me tell you why this movie. If you go to the internet and go to anyone, Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes, anywhere that has critic rankings and audience rankings, there is a massive disparity between the two schools of thought. And I know there's been lots of discussion about
it. Yes, I'll explain how that is bogus, but
audience ratings tend to be running about 50%. On Rotten Tomatoes, Star Wars has a 92% critic approval rating. And so I went along believing, I never normally care what the audience think, because most people in the audience are morons. I'm just going to say that right now.
Especially the ones that post on internet sites.
Yes.
Let's go on there.
Most of those people are morons. So I'm all ready to go to this movie that's getting basically over 9 out of 10 critical approval. I go, this movie sucks. I'm like, the critics don't know what they're talking about. Let me tell you why it got 90%. Remember a couple of months ago, Disney and the LA Times got into a big, massive back and forth where Disney were threatening the LA Times film critics that you will no longer be allowed to advance preview our movies, because apparently the LA Times had been running a lot of negative coverage about financial doings at Disneyland in Anaheim. There was a big uproar in the film critical industry.
Not sure that's exactly
and
right,
all the other journalists were going, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's not against that's against journalism, blah, 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 blah. So then Disney backed down. Disney being all powerful, though, I think that scared and intimidated the critics into all giving this crappy movie positive reviews. Hold on, now let me finish.
I love your hot takes, but
give me one more sentence.
There's no point in having this argument when you're just making things up.
When I go through the professional critics' reviews, not a single critic from a major U.S. publication gave it a negative one.
Because it's a good movie.
That's incorrect.
But we can talk about your personal criticism, but the notion that the 90% rating doesn't reflect that. And as I tried to explain to you beforehand, man.
It's a conspiracy. Disney strong-armed them. The critics all panicked. Because remember now...
Listen, if we're going to have one of these discussions, we can have a fun discussion like this. But it doesn't actually advance the substance of our debate here.
Okay.
So, it's not true. And the 50% on Metacritic, that's Rotten Tomatoes of fan rating, which is basically the only place that had a bad rating like that. Like their cinema score, meaning the people came out of the theaters.
The fan rating on Rotten Tomatoes was low as well.
That's what I mean.
Rotten Tomatoes. I'm sorry. My bad.
That was the only one that was like that. The ratings, what's it, cinema score? The one where they exit interview people.
Yeah.
Huge, great rating. Totally fine there. No criticisms. Those ratings are somewhat inflated generally anyway, but that's what it was. There's a group that came out. Oh, I have the wrong tab up. Wait a minute.
Because I'm going to come back with why I don't think this is a good movie shortly. It's got nothing to do with...
A Facebook page called Down With Disney's Treatment of Franchisees and Its Fanboys is claiming responsibility for tanking the Rotten Tomatoes audience score for the latest Star Wars, alleging that it used bots in a concerted attack against the Rian Johnson-directed movie. And this is apparently, they fashion themselves an alt-right group, and they are upset... They are upset with the veneration or the elevation
of
women and African Americans. Well, African in this case, African British.
African British.
But like their thought is this is too this is actually
too liberal.
This is a
pushing liberal
thing that like
yeah,
oh, this is about liberal things yeah. about people like you know saying that the good people are all the minorities and women and the bad people are all the white guys kind of thing. And so they said this is what we did. We went out there to sabotage the system. Rotten Tomatoes has not conceded this to be true, but of course they wouldn't because relying on their role in this sort of stuff. So I don't think that's necessarily true. What I found interesting, we previewed this a little when we discussed beforehand, and we'll talk about the substance of your arguments in a second. But
I haven't given my argument. I haven't told you why I think it's a shot.
I know.
A bad movie.
Like, listen, as long as you're going to give me this fictitious conspiracy theory, I want to give my broad overarching
it's not fictitious.
Thing.
Look, I'm always open to a conspiracy. Listen to me. You could convince me that we didn't go to the moon, although there's a part of me who knows that we probably went. But if you try and convince me that Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy on his own, I'll shoot that down in about 5 seconds.
So I'm
not somehow an out there conspiracist.
I don't know how to argue
I'm
like
just saying.
The funsies version of things, but the idea that there's a conspiracy
against
that, that has collected in all of the reviewers, all of the professional
no, but
reviewers.
But Disney strong armed the third estate to be positive
and they're in the
about
newspaper industry, and they're,
to
in
shut
the,
down
and they're in the newspaper yeah. industry
okay.
as well.
All right.
I will tell you why why the critics gave a review, and you can give it. There can be a criticism, but this is why. What I find odd about it is that, generally speaking, you have criticized the fanboy technical elements of Star Wars.
No, because I want to be clear now before you go down this road. I'm not about to criticize it. A lot of the negative fan reviews have held the film up as like crimes against Star Wars canon. I don't care. You can tell whatever story you like. I just think it's a shoddy bit of movie making, poorly edited, far too long, some iffy acting, and some badly written stuff. Is it an homage to the worst of George Lucas? Yes, because some of the writing's terrible, some of the dialogue's terrible. The movie starts strong and then loses steam the whole way.
But it's about 35. I'm going to forge ahead.
But this has nothing to do with, Vader wouldn't do that.
The reason.
Bad movie.
The reason that the critics liked it is because on a movie basis, on an emotional basis, it struck some things that weren't like that. I'm not saying that you should sympathize with the techno geeks and the fanboys.
Oh, I don't
and
know.
You would normally consider me to be one of those people. I'm telling you right now that this is exactly what this movie franchise should do. It should move past these things. It came up with new themes.
I agree with you.
Your criticism last time was that it was reiteration. And now it's not reiteration. And now you're going to say it's bad. Now, I guess we'll come back to whether you should what parts about it you think are bad, but the idea that now you would flip sides to this is, especially after you just advanced that conspiracy theory, is that I almost don't want to take any of this seriously. You're trying to create some stuff. For the Atlantic
seriously
voice,
that
you
know? Take seriously that I didn't enjoy.
But
this
let me
movie
tell you. Let me tell. Let's talk minutes. About the, whether the movie's bad or good. It certainly has some wooden parts. I was in the early stages. It's like, what are they doing with some of these things? You know, the whole bit with the casino, while an interesting story in and of itself, did not fit into the story.
Yep.
It was like they had written it in to have a role, and then they realized it wasn't going to have a role.
That's bad movie making.
That's a mistake.
That's
in the
my
thing.
Point. These are going to be my criticisms of it.
Okay. I'm sympathetic. Okay. So that's I'm saying there are certainly elements of like plot things. You go, okay, why? But those things I don't care, because at the end of the day, the parts with Daisy Ridley, the parts with Heron Wren, Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, Luke Skywalker, were freaking great. As a emotional turning the page and coming up with new plots and theory, new themes of what this was about was fantastic.
No.
And if you try to tell me that freaking battle in the throne room was anything other than amazing, then I'm just not going to listen to you anymore.
I'm going to tell you that.
What would be your criticism of the battle in the throne room?
Well, okay, so I draw it into a group.
Not only as an action set piece, but also as a emotional turning of what people did.
As to it, that is a straight up, action adventure movie. I think the opening set piece is terrific. The throne room fight was very good. That being said, the movie seemed to have four climaxes too many. It's poorly placed. For example, it's poorly paced, and I think we agree on this whole casino narrative that shows up about a third of the way in, that seems to exist only for itself and lasts too long. It seems to be, I can think of some cool scenes with them running away on these horses.
I bet you the movie was written for that to have a point, and then they realized it didn't tie together,
then
right?
Get rid
and so
of
they
it.
Left. Well, but it's but hard you, to do yeah, when you can. When your major you star is one of your major stars is John Boyega. You cut him out of the entire movie is a problem. But
it was in and of itself,
if it wasn't for the fact that it had no ending, I would have said it was good, because I thought the whole thing of, going there and dealing with a new environment and talking about something, I thought that was good. It was the problem was that it ultimately didn't go anywhere. If it had paid off, everybody would be like, oh yeah, that was interesting. It kind of paid off.
I do agree with you that I think it's trying to reach out into a new direction. I just thought it did it badly. And here's my point here. I'm of the opinion that the new Star Wars trilogy exists to
transition.
Transition. So that means killing off the old characters and surviving with the new one. Clearly, the strategy has been to kill off one of these dudes every movie.
Yeah,
unfortunately, one of them's already dead.
The plan was for Carrie Fisher to be.
Although,
the,
frankly, I'm watching her fly through space. I'm like, oh, come on now. But anyway.
No, that was a big mistake. I don't understand why they...
That
seemed to be badly done.
Just all of it,
because
was funky. Surviving
that, they could have done that better. I don't know why that came.
So clearly, her dying in real life has kind of thrown a bit of a wrench into using these dudes to carry through more movies to give them all an exciting exit. I did believe that the Luke Skywalker character was handled very poorly in this movie, not for the reasons that he did things that were out of character, but for the fact that he appears for the first 25 minutes and then completely disappears and then comes back at the end. And I'm like, oh, don't have him in it at all. For example, when Han Solo, and Force Awakens is now a much better movie than I originally gave it credit for. When Han Solo showed up in Force Awakens, it gives the movie an emotional jolt, and then it helps extend the plot in terms of my son is the new villain.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker, the last movie left it with, she has met Luke Skywalker. The new movie picks up with that, and then all of a sudden, Luke Skywalker, he's gone on an extended lunch break. Because his character just completely disappears from the movie without any explanation.
Well, it's because they leave the
place. And so I just felt it was like poorly written and poorly paced.
I didn't see a flaw.
The casino stuff shows up, slows down the movie, we end up on some sidetrack that ultimately really isn't that important, other than introducing another character who may or not be a traitor, but because we do not have any emotional affiliation with him, what do we care when he stabs some of the good guys in the back?
I thought it was very strange when Justin Theroux, who is the guy from The Leftovers and Jennifer Aniston, although the tabloids seem to say that he's not with Jennifer Aniston anymore.
Who knows what
he was? He was the code breaker at the table. They go in there, okay. And I'm like, oh, look, we're gonna have Justin Theroux, and then they don't even use him, and then they segue over to Benicio del Toro.
Again, I felt that the movie sort of had too many extended climaxes. Like, I do feel emotionally when you have the throne room fight, which is a really good set piece, but ultimately your primary villain, or appears to be your primary villain, is killed off in a way which either A, they didn't do it right, or clearly he's not dead. then we have another set piece beyond that, and it's like, oh, geez, just end this thing. That I do find, and this is not a criticism of them as actors, I'm already bored of the lead villain. And I think Adam Driver is great.
You are literally you are in the extreme minority.
Because I'm done with this. Are you good? Are you bad? I mean, clearly you're bad, because if you're not bad, we don't have a villain. So why do we have all this emotion and angst? The two of them talking to each other across the galaxy. I'm like, oh, forget. This is moronic. This is like high school. I just felt and it was interesting. If you read, Rian Johnson has given a number of interviews where before they started, he and his writers sat down and he made everyone watch a couple of films, including 12 O'Clock High, which you can see in the opening sequence. The writers all went, we had to sit and watch 12 O'Clock High with Gregory Peck. Mm. So that opening sequence is like an old World War II bomber movie. They also watched Bridge Over the River Kwai, Seven Samurai, and another great movie that I can't remember. Those writers must have had a great time watching those films, but not a lot of it showed up in the film they ended up with, because there's a lot of poor writing and very sort of hokey and lazy connecting of the dots. Characters come and go, they're not properly introduced, you're not quite sure who they are, no one has a narrative arc that leads to any kind of dramatic tension other than, okay, let's just get through it.
No one has a dramatic arc that leads to any tension?
No, I don't. Even
the main people I just mentioned, Mark Hamill, the Adam Driver, and
Mark Hamill disappears from most of the movie.
Tension?
Daisy Ridley's character, and again, I don't want to get all Star Wars-y about, is she related to someone, forces in her this, that, and the other. For example, there is a scene where she's on the island and she goes downstairs into the basement type thing, and she's seeing all mirror images of herself, and it all looks great visually, and then it sort of ends, and I'm like, okay, that's great, you still really kind of haven't explained stuff to me. I just found it a film where I'm constantly, it made the kind of sloppy decisions that the last James Bond movie made, in terms of sort of either leaning on an audience expectation for a character, or kind of knowingly like the audience are expecting this, so we'll just presume that you've got it. At a certain level, movies are supposed to either explain what's going on or show you what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I felt Star Wars made too many shorter jumps of that. You know, I take two other characters that I feel are not kind of getting their due. The Oscar Isaac character, yes, he's a hot-headed, wants to do his own thing. Pretty cliche. We've seen that in many movies. Is there any sort of resolution to all of that? Yeah,
that's the point, right? Because he doesn't. At the end, he's realizing that he needs to emerge into a leadership role.
Yeah,
and he can't just do whatever he wants to do.
Took 2 hours and 45 minutes of some pretty hokey stuff for you to get there. John Boyega's character Finn, I think it's very. I said to you at the end of the last movie, and I went back and I
listened to our Star Wars. There's a Finn problem.
Finn, I think we both agreed after Force Awakens that Finn was a really compelling. There was the potential for a really compelling character, someone who was with the rebellion, was with the bad guys. And then wanted out. Even in this one, it all seemed to be very trite and quickly turned around. Yes, I'm conflicted. Oh, I don't like these guys. And it's like, wow, you really wasted some potential there for some interesting character development. The big criticism of the second set of three that George Lucas did was when he was suddenly left on his own without all the star power of and the newness of Hamill and Ford and Leia, that there was a lot of hokey writing and over-explaining and paper-thin characters. And I feel that this one has, in the same way that The Force Awakens homaged the first three movies, this one successfully homaged the second set of three movies that I think are crap. I really didn't enjoy it. I really struggle with it. I'm like, oh, now she's going to do that. He's unhappy again, then he might be the villain. And then, and everyone kept going, yeah, this is the funniest Star Wars movie ever. I'm like, yeah. Not the
funniest, but I thought they did a good job with those parts. And, the idea that...
Here's the sad thing. When Han Solo died in the first one, and I remember, and obviously it is a difficult act for the second one of these movies to follow. Force Awakens gets to come, and basically we're bringing it back. And so it rides along on a slightly overhyped wave. I remember the first time in The Force Awakens when you see the Millennium Falcon. And I'm getting to the age where I start getting a bit teary-eyed in movies. I'm like, oh my God, it's the Millennium Falcon. And then when they kill Han Solo and he's there, and I'm like, oh my God, they killed Han Solo. In this one, I was expecting with Luke Skywalker, who you've spent a movie building towards, that we would have that kind of power. But at the end of the movie, spoiler, it appears that they've killed him off. Oh, they killed him off, though, because he couldn't do that. But no one explained that he couldn't do that. So there was no sense of tension in him. There just seemed to be a disconnect between anticipation and tension and dramatic moment. We just had this, yes, it is a movie that has to connect a story that's brought us this far and that we know is going to continue. It did so in a very rote way. By the time it was, if they'd cut out half an hour from that movie, I would have come out and gone, yeah, okay, there you go. Well, let's see what happens in the next one. I came out and after 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I'm like, I'm kind of done with these Star Wars movies. Well, I loved Rogue One.
So, see, this makes me think,
and I'm not all the way in like you are.
But the point is, how it's moving out past. Like, to say you're done with them means tied to the old model, the old themes, that when they turn to new themes, they don't interest you.
No, I don't have a problem with the themes. I have a problem with themes not being executed with any kind of dramatic tension.
Well, I mean, I think the main
parts remember when were we complained about the James Bond movie, and I'd said we'd had this discussion about how the fact that the villain is his brother.
Yeah.
And I remember you'd said at the time, yeah, but they really didn't go there, did they? And we both said, yeah, it was sort of there and it wasn't there, and it's all just sort of a wasted opportunity. I felt this way about this movie. There's stuff out there that if you just execute it differently, you've got something that's rolling.
It's not done yet. I didn't feel, but it hasn't
taken the next step in any which way that says to me, Yezef, come on, I've got one more for you, that you're going to get a lot of answers. I don't have any questions left. I'm more interested to see the Han Solo movie
because I think we'll come to that. Apparently it's going to suck.
I loved Rogue One, and I said at the time, it's set in the Star Wars universe. It's completely done away with all this other stuff. I love that movie, but that movie also moved in a way. It builds to a big climax. The heroes are dying.
It was easy there.
There are some dramatic boxes that it checks that when you leave the movie, you've been on some sort of an emotional ride. I went on no emotional ride in this movie, other than can I get out to my car quick.
As usual, this all boils down to Zef psychology.
Yeah.
I think, which is...
Yes. Because I'm Joe moviegoer.
You were fine to embrace...
I'm Joe everyman.
I mean, listen. You cannot deny that you're an outlier in this review. There are certainly some people.
I cannot believe that I'm aligned with some of these pseudo geeks that are hammering it.
Well,
I can't believe I'm aligned.
But you're not even hammering on the same basis.
No, I know.
Right. So that's my point. You're an outlier. Like the people who have disliked it have disliked it because it wasn't true to certain Star Wars things.
I have a problem with that.
Exactly. So the fact that you're reviewing it negatively, apart from that,
shows that I wasn't paid off by Disney. No, they can't strong arm me.
This is where Well, this kind of fits to what I was thinking of. Like for Rogue One, you were fine with it because it was divorced from everything.
Yeah.
But what's happening with this new movie thing is as they turn the page onto new characters, you just don't want to go.
Because I think it's executed badly.
No, I think you like just don't want to go.
No, I do.
I think you're being an old fuddy-duddy.
You're not embracing.
I do think, one thing I did realize partway through that movie, it is still for kids. That, like, the thing is that we're reviewing this movie as indeterminate middle-aged people.
Yeah,
and looking for some themes that may not ring for us. But listen, if you are a 12-year-old to a 20-year-old, the thing between the two leads, the villain and the, you know, I don't mean it's like a romantic story, but I think it has more resonance for somebody.
Oh, it's horrible.
Well, but that's because you were like a curmudgeon.
Here's what I think one of the problems with Star Wars, the movie, is the new Star Wars.
Like, you can't appreciate like personal struggle.
I appreciated my own struggle sitting through that. Darth Vader is an iconic villain to the extent that they took another three movies to show how the villain came about. I enjoyed, and this is not a criticism again of Adam Driver, who I think is terrific, I enjoyed the way that Kylo Ren was introduced in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. The way he was handled in this second movie, even at the end of it, he doesn't... Star Wars is very much a relatively, because it's made for kids, simplistic battle of good against evil. I don't feel they've written the evil well enough. After so many movies, the New Order or whatever they're called, the Empire, they're behaving as we expect them to behave. They're the crappiest Guardians of the Galaxy. The Rebellion are an even crappier revolt, you know, bunch of rebels. Because none of this stuff ever seems to stick, you know. I mean, so, yeah, like the Nazis in films now, you know, when you see a film, like, you know, it's even made a joke of in the Harrison Ford movie, "I Hate Nazis," and we all kind of get it because it's sort of like a stock bad guy. After all these movies now.
Illinois Nazis.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, there's good people on both sides. you know, the Empire now sort of stock villains. But I don't feel that the Kylo Ren character has been given due justice. Where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm scared of that guy.
But this is why,
and that's why I think it's a bad movie.
No,
it's
this
poorly
is,
written.
But see, again, like, I don't think, like, you're caught between clinging to the old things and new ones.
What's the point of having these movies if there's no bad guys? I'm watching just some space opera about life with these bloody families again. I want a villain who's going to start kicking ass. All good superhero movies have a strong villain.
Well, yeah. You don't think he's a bad guy?
I still can't decide. Well, is he conflicted? Is he not?
Well, he's conflicted. He's clearly conflicted.
No, I want to see him kick some ass. Well, that's what villains do. Yeah, the Joker's not conflicted. You know, the Joker's doing away with people. So that the hero can rise against him.
You're just being the 50.
No, I'm a kid.
Like even the Batman movies are a perfect example of where our villains and our heroes got
slightly mixed up.
Exactly.
But they're slightly mixed up and there's getting people confused. There's nothing confusing. For that. 45 minutes into this Star Wars movie, I'm thinking that Kylo Ren's going to become a good guy.
Yeah.
But then where are the bad guys after that?
But see, one of the things that are lost on, people don't sort of think of, you tend to think of Kylo Ren, Darth Vader, right? The parallel thing.
Sure.
But that's not right. Because then
put some distance between them.
No, not because of the reason that they act differently, but because Darth Vader was never in charge of the bad guys. He was always a second fiddle. He was, you know, you always had the Emperor above him. And so this entire
sounding
time,
like one of those geeks again now.
No, I'm just
deep
saying,
into this.
This is what makes it more, like, we now have, like, Kylo Ren did probably the baddest ass evil thing he could do, which was kill the guy on top of him, right? Like, he basically said,
did he do or did she do? I don't remember.
No, he did it.
Oh, he did? Oh,
yeah, yeah.
It all happened very quickly and in such a way that you know that guy's coming back.
I mean, listen,
I don't care, everyone tells you that guy's coming back.
How many times did you have to go to the restroom during this? Was this part of the factor?
Okay. I went during the casino stuff and I really hadn't missed anything.
Not really missing there. But, you know, you now have a person who basically struck out against his remaining father figure. He's killed all of the people who has ever given him guidance, or all the people who have given him guidance he's struck out against.
Yeah, I'll give you
that. So now he's like, well, gosh, I don't want to analogize it to certain politicians because age bracket wise, you know what he is like? he's oh my God, I forgot the name of the guy who runs North Korea.
Oh, Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. Now, we don't know a lot about him, but he's a guy who, as a youngster, is thrown into being the head of this evil thing. Like, this guy has killed off everybody, but Darth Vader never did that. Darth Vader was dutiful deputy, and it wasn't until he only uprose against the Emperor when he was turning good. Like, he throws the Emperor down in the thing, but he was never the super baddie. So, I think it's a modern era, and if you want to be like, if you were going to be anti-alt-right, you'd say, oh, you're humanizing these bad people. But that's what the point is. Like, it is now a movie. Like, taking off the mask, I think, was a huge thing. The mask, like, basically his boss tells him,
I'll give you that.
Don't be a kid. I mean, what do you have a mask on for? You don't need a mask. Darth Vader needed a mask to, like, stay alive.
Yeah.
You just put this mask on because it gives you a funny voice and you don't have to face the world. Take your mask off. I mean, in a tantrum, he destroys his mask. We're not going to see that mask again, which I'm a little bummed out because that voice was a great voice. But, you know, like the off weird scratchy thing. Yeah. And now we're just going to have him there. So what is that version we're going to get there? And I still think, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, like, I don't know what J.J. Abrams is going to do here, because I don't know how you unwind this and still have bad guys and good guys. I think this is a problem with all these things, all these Star Wars movies. If you're going to have a long chain of them and it's good against evil, then good can never win. Like, good can never win, because if it won, what the heck would be the point? The only thing I could think of is you could turn it around is have good win and then have evil spring out of good again.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Like in the next set. You know, if I wasn't doing movies for kids, if I'm in charge of the next one and I'm not doing movies for kids, I actually think Rey's... See, this is the interesting thing. I am more suspicious of could Rey become bad than whether or not I care if Kylo Ren is really good. And right there, this is part of the imbalance to me, where I'm now left with this sort of... Again, it's to me, I felt like I just wasn't told a good story. Like, stuff that should be more interesting was passed over, and stuff that I'm like, yeah, where are we going with this? Again, you know, and I think, unfortunately for Star Wars, because you've already committed three movies to how does the ultimate villain get created?
Yeah.
Right? So, in a strange way, whatever you do with Kylo Ren, you're constantly running this narrative of, well, we've already done that, we can't do that again. That being said, in a strange way, with Rey's character, if she ended up bad, I could sit back and go, wow, they did a much better job creating a bad guy than they kind of did with Darth Vader, although, frankly, with Darth Vader, it was always hurt because you know where he ends up.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I was frustrated with the film, maybe because of Rian Johnson. And the fact that you know, career-wise, if you're getting involved in this franchise, you're making a big-time decision that you're not doing other stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons why with these other movies, these other directors are dipping in and dipping out for whatever reason, and why you're getting in people like Ron Howard. So the movie producer is going, look, you owe me a favor. Can you come in and finish this for me? Because you have to go all the way in to make this work. And so maybe I'm disappointed because Rian Johnson went all the way in and there have been writers' rooms working side by side for 5 years to plot out this thing, that I ended up with a movie that I felt didn't come to any conclusion is the wrong word. But I felt like the arcs just kind of didn't go anywhere, and then
people could have said that about The Empire Strikes Back, because The Empire Strikes Back was a setup for a third movie, and was very obviously a setup for a third movie.
Ooh, you know, but The Empire Strikes Back is different in that you kill one character for the first time, or you think you kind of dump one character for the first time, then it's finally. I never left, you know. Even when you watch the original Star Wars, knowing what you know comes after it. You know, to me, In Empire Strikes Back, when it's like, yeah, I'm your dad, that's a big moment that hits you like a ton of bricks. Yeah, it's unfortunate umpteen movies into this thing. Yeah, it is hard to recreate those moments. But I feel this movie went entirely the other way. It didn't give me any moments. Just kind of sort of rumbled on. And I feel like there's a lot of sort of half, and maybe it's half finished. Yeah, there is potential in Rey. There is potential in I still think Finn's story needs to be explored.
Well, that's they have you're to figure right.
It's
out what
a
to
kid,
do with
it's a kid's thing, so what maybe
I,
you can't.
Well, what I was thinking about, like, so as the movie gets more serious and, like, it's literally the final battles between good and evil, what do you do with the funny guy? And they did it with Han Solo, and I'm trying to think of, like, the moments, you know, when Han Solo swoops in on the Death Star battle kind of thing. You know, like, what can you do with Finn's got to – there's got to be a way to remix him into the central – thing here, and I imagine what's going to happen, because one of the things they did,
goofy love triangles that seem to be appearing. Yeah, I mean, come on, there you go. I don't think it's now.
A love triangle. If there's going to be anything between them, it's probably going to be like Rey saying, "No, I can't do that with my life. Like, I have to be the person like leading the new Jedi or whatever it is. It's going to be like that. They'll never be together. There'll never be a love triangle in the sense that." They'll always know there's a distance, but he'll always be loyal to her or something like that. She can become like the new Princess Leia / Luke, like some weird blend of
yeah,
you know, aloof and whatever. But but there's got to be a way to turn him. And oh, I think one of the things is by boiling down the leftover resistance to a small group of people. Poe is now going to be in charge of the military aspect of it. You know, because there's nobody else. I mean, like, and he's now become a more mature person. He's now not just a flyboy. He is like a leader of people. Yeah. And Finn is somehow going to have to slide up into a Poe role where he's the more renegade-ish kind of person, but probably he's going to be, I mean, what strengths does he have other than he was a stormtrooper and so he knows how to fight, you know, he managed to fight a Phasma, which by the way, Chrome Phasma, right? It was supposed to be such a big deal. And like, she...
There's more point.
Like, I don't know, like, what...
There's more point. Yeah, it's lazy story. Oh, yeah, boom here. Oh, boom.
That wasn't Rian Johnson's fault. That was J.J. Abrams' fault in the first place of creating this character that you had nothing you could do with. Like, she ends up... She's the one who, like, lets down the shields in the first one. And, like, as somebody joked, I saw a review basically, like, apparently she was not demoted.
Give BB-8 his own movie. Give those little Pogue things. Pogues.
They're pretty. I mean, like, listen, movie. For cute things, and you know,
yeah, he could have done a lot worse.
Yeah, that's not bad.
The only creature I had a problem with was those ice goats on a salt planet.
Well, they're like
the dogs, ice crystal dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you get there and you think it's a snowy planet, but the guy licks and goes, "Oh, this is salt."
You know the entire reason. For so that how could salt
the ice
was?
Planet? How could the ice dogs live in the salt planet? There you go. You see?
No.
Well, you throw salt down when it gets icy.
Yeah, maybe they weren't.
And then maybe, the whole lifting rock like a, stuff. Come
they're
on.
Like a no, different it's not funny. Life form. I mean, they did that whole thing so they could have the red and all that going on. Yeah. And the part I didn't notice, like there was a part when Luke was at the end and he's getting all shot up, and I was like, "Oh, look, he got a haircut like for this thing."
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like I realized that okay, well, it wasn't really him. That's why you realize he looked different. And so apparently, you know, when they're like dragging their feet. There's a couple moments in that battle when they're out there with the lightsabers that they're dragging their feet around.
Yeah.
And if you, I didn't notice it, but apparently when he drags his feet, you don't see any red. Like, so.
Oh, because he's a
thing. Because he's not really there.
Here's the thing, but I do think that.
Really hope anybody who's avoiding spoilers didn't.
Yeah. In a strange way, how they handled Luke Skywalker to me sort of sums up how I felt about the movie. And I don't have an issue. I know that Mark Hamill had said at the time, I don't like what they've done with the character. You know, because I think he sees Luke Skywalker in a much more idealistic way.
But then he watched the movie and he changed his mind.
Yeah. Well, also because he got paid. And when What's-Her-Name died, someone from Disney called and said, look, we might need you for the next movie. Yeah, right. So don't be doing your other stuff. Obviously, to me, again, there was an opportunity with like Luke Skywalker to really show this bitten, cynical, I am done with a force and here's why. But I felt like they still kind of didn't really get into it enough. They didn't. And then at that moment, and then he just comes back at the end. And I just, again, I felt all these things were just slightly, there were some good ideas there. But again, I think it's a bad movie because the good ideas are not executed well. They're not bad because of the decisions that are made. I just think the execution is
Terry, I can give you a little opportunity here. Are you really saying it's a bad movie?
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
Or is it a bad movie relative to what a Star Wars movie should be?
I think it's a pretty bad movie, and let me tell you why. I had not watched The Force Awakens in its entirety. I've only seen it once in the cinema. Obviously, the cable channels, channels, one of them, I think it's Stars, was playing it again, obviously. And so I caught it one night, just before Han Solo re-arrives and stands there with Chewie and goes, "Chewie, we're home." Big moment in the story. And then I watched that for about 25 minutes, and maybe this comes back to where we start and talking about Spielberg. It's pulled off with some style and some humor and panache, and it's not new anymore. It exists, so it's not a new thing anymore. And it's done in such a way where there is rhythm and beat to how it all works. And I sat back and I go, wow, Star Wars Force Awakens is crafted in such a way that you sit there, and whether you're all the way in or whether you don't know anything about any of this, you are still taken on a journey that has good dramatic and narrative and atmospheric beats. Last Jedi just didn't have that. It just kind of droned on for me through slow sections and false climaxes.
Bad movies.
That's what bad movies are, I'm afraid.
Bad movies are a lot worse than that.
You're
about to say bad for a Star Wars movie.
No, bad for a big ticket. I can't think of any other big tentpole big picture movies that are this bad.
Yeah.
And I always exempt Last Action Hero with Schwarzenegger because I like that movie.
Did you see Superman versus Batman?
No.
That was a bad movie.
Well, there you go. Well, no, and to be fair, because I haven't seen even worse movies, I'm now being unfair on this movie for being bad. That's your argument.
You saw A Live and Die in the West.
No, $6 million to Die in the West.
Yeah.
No, I didn't go and see that either.
You didn't see that. You were like a fan of it.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't go and see it because all the reviews said it was bad, and I'm like, I ain't spending money on that.
Right, so that's so it's a bad movie relative to the movie Zeph has seen, and Zeph has discerning taste, and so therefore he sees it.
It's as bad as I thought Spectre was bad, and I kicked Spectre all over the room, and I'm a James Bond guy. It's as bad as that.
That's because you felt betrayed in that context.
A little bit, but also felt that was a bad movie with long sections of no action and people talking and very poorly paced and a climax that just sort of seems to roll by. I thought Last Jedi had too many climaxes. It went on too long. It has a first reel going into the second reel that is completely needless and just slows down the movie, and it has poor character development.
So we're going.
Ultimately, the first 15 minutes of it were as good as I'm like, oh wow, they've turned. I thought Rogue One was great. The Last Jedi opens, and maybe it's a fault of any movie, again, to bring it back to James Bond. A lot of James Bond movies suffer because the first 20 minutes are so great, and then the rest of the movie sucks. This was a bit like that, because the opening 20 minutes of the movie is great.
You know, I had my complaints about the bombing run. It seemed a little bit weird, but...
Yeah, a little bit weird once again. But I don't want to get into these sort of criticisms that this massive spaceship can have one big hole on top that you can bomb. I don't want to be that dweeby about it.
I don't really care about that piece of it, but I thought it was just a weird exercise.
Tied to the Disney conspiracy, and I'm like, yeah, I see it.
How about, so just brief, I mean, we're way going long, but
at this point,
I'm fully embracing it because it's basically two episodes, even if we put it out at one time. The Han Solo movie. Did you see the latest news?
Apparently, that thing sucks. They're really worried about that.
Isn't this thing done already? Like, it's supposed to come out midway through the year. This is not a next Christmas thing, by the way.
Well, here's what happened.
This is in May. It's
here's what happened with that Han Solo movie. They had what was his name? The two brothers. Are they brothers or a partnership that did the Lego movie? Were doing it. They're co-directors.
Yeah.
Then they got released, as apparently happens to be on these movies, and the studio drafted in Ron Howard, old hand. I think Ron Howard's a good movie maker.
And
that sounds awful when I just say that. I mean,
he's a
very good movie maker. Apparently, they brought him in and said, "You got a whole load of footage here, you better make it work." So he's brought in his own editor, and apparently, originally, he just had to reshoot some stuff and then put it together. But in reshooting some stuff and putting it together, they've then had to remove a whole character. They had to bring in a new character. And apparently, the talk from the set is he's had to rewrite a third of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden this week, and again, I'm half joking, although I still believe it, the Disney conspiracy, the stories have suddenly appeared from nowhere without anyone actually saying, you know, unnamed studio executives have then said that Disney's expectations for this movie are now really, really low. And then also stories have now appeared that no one realized that the lead actor couldn't really act. They've had a coach in all the time. Ron Howard's had to shoot all kinds of things. Paul Bettany has been jettisoned in to as a new character.
Dropped in
because in reshooting, they had to completely jettison out Michael K. Williams' character because his personal schedule. The whole thing's a bit of a train wreck. Now, Hollywood has always been able to rescue something from train wrecks. But this whole thing from start to finish, it's got to the stage where unnamed sources are attempting to downplay its success, which is very rare for a big for any big franchise, for someone to go, yeah, you know, for these stories to get out there. Again, to take it back to James Bond, Spectre got affected by those by that North Korean hack, and so script was dropped online and all kinds of things. It had a lot of reshoots. They had to redo the whole third act. But never did I hear stories up front with people going, yeah, our expectations for this movie are not very high. Those stories are now out there for this Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
And that is very odd for a... You always get people going, yeah, Titanic's going to be a disaster. He's gone way... You hear the director's gone way over budget. Or you hear... The director doesn't know what has had trouble with actors. Or you hear that, you know, you hear stories like that, but you very rarely hear a studio attempt to downplay something. And that's what's happening here. With Rogue One, the studio did a much better job of, and they got the director, Gareth Thomas, in tow to sort of go, yeah, you know, I made the movie I wanted to make, even though sections were reshot and another editor came in to redo things. Everyone was talking from a company line there, and the movie came out, and everyone thinks it's great, and no one cares about the on-set soap opera. It is very rare for these kind of stories to be out there 6 months ahead of the movie. They must be really worried about what they've got there. Or maybe Ron Howard has turned around to the producers and said, I don't know what you've gotten me into, but even I can't rescue this. I need to start over. And they can't afford to start over.
Yeah.
And Ron Howard, being a good soldier, only took the job, I think, because he knew they were like, we've got a problem here. Hey, we'll finance two movies of your choice if you come in and do this for us. So Ron Howard, as a good company man, said, yeah, I'll come in and see what I can do. It's almost like something from 1950s and 1960s movie making. But here in the 2000s, we now have this situation where, wow, they're nervous about it. And the fact that there are public stories, this dude cannot act, that is unheard of. This dude was in a Coen's Brother movie and a few other things. That's unheard of that an actor, that a studio is allowing this stuff out there. That's unheard of. It really is, isn't it?
So
the criticisms of Batman and Superman and those movies all came from outside and unidentified bloggers. But here you've got people attributing to studio sources. Unheard of for Hollywood.
So if I'm them, so what I think is weird is why they decided to change the schedule. So they've got this coming in May.
It's moved back, which is always a sign there's a problem. I think it's moved back. It's been moved back to June, isn't it? Didn't they try and move it back, or they couldn't?
Is scheduled for May 25th right now.
Okay.
I mean, if they moved to June, that wouldn't be much of a move. But I don't understand why they're going off their pattern. So, like, according to Den of Geek, which, by the way, this website is abominable to work on, but they have Star Wars Episode 9, next episode of what we just saw, coming out May of 2019. They've owned Christmas for the last 3 years. Why would they possibly be switching to try to be a summer movie when we just have described about how the summer movies, there's no summer movies anymore?
Well, I've got a theory about that. Solo was supposed
Because what I was thinking about this is, if this movie's this bad, I'd bury it. If I'm Disney, what I'm going to say is, you know what? This movie's crap. We're not putting it out there. Sorry, folks.
This is what, well, I think they've overreached. So Force Awakens came back and they had this plan to do regular Star Wars every 2 years, and then every other year, yeah, we'll give you something else. So overreach?
They're going faster.
Well, that's overreaching.
Why would you not set it back then?
Well, I think they overreached because the first Force Awakens was huge. And let's be fair on this movie, even though I think it's crap, it's huge. Rogue One was huge. In classic studio executive form, someone's got a bit too greedy. Well, let's up it. And we can keep making these other stories because, you know something? They're going to buy anything because this is all working now. And I think they've overreached. You'll notice that there's no talk of any other old character. Yeah, the Boba Fett rumor continually is out there.
I would
there,
believe
so I
that if they planned on putting out Part 9 next Christmas, a year from now. But that's not what they're doing. They've just like basically staggered the schedule off 6 months.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea why you would do that.
Well, because they don't have another nonstop. Because remember, once they bring... If they stick to their normal schedule,
yeah,
they go Star Wars now, then they go Han Solo movie.
Next Christmas.
No, Han Solo this summer.
No, my point is, why do it this summer? Why aren't they doing it next Christmas?
Well, because it's 2 years between the two main Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that's what it was this time.
No, it was 2 years. This time, if you
went... No, 2 years. It was no, 2 years.
Force Awakens was 2015. Yeah. Then Last Jedi is 2017. If you go with the J.J. Abrams Part 3, it's 2018.
No.
You've gone 2-2-1.
What? Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? I don't know why you do that.
No, why don't you just go 2-2-2 like we just... Why is that not the regular schedule? Why isn't it
15-17-19? Don't hammer me. They're the ones who changed it. I'm telling you what they should be doing, which is 2-2-2. Because they don't have these spin-off properties for the off years. They thought
sure
they were going
to. Sure they do. They have Han Solo they could be doing next Christmas.
They moved it up to the summer because originally they didn't know it was going to bomb, so they got too greedy.
So move it back. Do it over.
You can't now.
Why not?
Well, the business is...
They have an untold amount of money, like endless. They could redo this movie from scratch. Well, there's nothing else. They don't have to do anything else. They just move it to Christmas.
But even Disney don't have that kind of money to just burn.
Sure they do.
They just burned $300 million.
They just made...
How much did Last Jedi cost? $300 million?
I don't know.
But movie executives don't get to... You don't get to write that off. You've got to put it out there.
But if you're making...
And if you sit on it for 6 months...
5 times the amount of your budget every time you put a movie out.
They ride that Solo won't. They are concerned.
Well, they're not going to if they put it out now as it stands.
They don't have any choice.
Do it over. Sure they can.
That's how the industry works.
I'm running out of breath.
Yeah. And you got a cold.
Yeah.
Well, you need to wear one of those masks. Like, what's his face?
I don't think that was necessarily a preventative
of... I will kill you, Ray. Was that a good? Because it's all metallic.
I have a little toy upstairs that makes... It's not because it's made for that. No, it's like this little this little megaphone that like it changes your voice. It's amazing like what kind of technology things like. We gave these out as stocking stuffers at one point.
Oh, really?
I
didn't get one.
And it's like, if I had had that as a kid, it would have been like the most amazing toy.
Oh, yeah.
It has four different, like you just talk into it and it changes your voice from four different ways. And one of the ways sounds a little bit like...
See if you can get it and we'll do a whole show with
if
that.
If you hit pause, I'll run up there and I'll get it.
We'll do a whole show with those things when we're trying to get through.
Good. We might need to get the batteries through some though because I noticed the batteries were running down.
All right. Do we have anything else on this?
We're ready to get out. I think we're out.
All right. So you liked it. I didn't.
Yeah.
I think it's clear to say this is down to the Disney conspiracy. I'm going to call it. I'm calling them out.
Yeah.
And if we have a problem with our website going up and down, I'm going to blame them.
You're like Donald Trump in the sense that by making clearly fantastical claims, it devalues your actual valid points.
I'm like Donald Trump in that I'm like a genius.
Stable genius.
Stable
genius.
Yeah. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice. 3,000 miles of opinion.